again, and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the podcast where two best friends and comedy writers kill time by asking each other questions while waiting for the show to either take off or fall apart. I am one half of this program, morning riser, evening runner, late night writer Daniel O'Brien, joined as always by my co-host who insists on being called the Ty Cobb of podcasting, Soren Bowie. Soren, say hello.
Hello, everybody. I'm the Ty Cobb of podcasting. I'm an award-winning writer, a better-than-average neighbor, and just a truly outstanding wedding guest. If I've been to one of your weddings and you're listening, go ahead, write in. Tell me I'm wrong. I dare you.
Soren, that's so funny that you bring that up, because every single bit of this is going to just invite more questions than anything else. But on Monday night, I was taking an adult Afro-Brazilian dance class over Zoom. Because I'm trying to learn how to be a better dancer, because I've been thinking about this John Mulaney quote where he said, the worst dancer at a wedding is the person who's not dancing. And I thought, sometimes that's me. And I don't want to be that person. I want to be someone who is a fun guy at a wedding. And so I want to dance more. And I'm only going to dance more if I feel more comfortable dancing, which is why I'm taking adult Zoom Afro-Brazilian dance classes. And the connection to you specifically is, years ago, we were in Beloit, Wisconsin, a small town in Wisconsin named Beloit because there is a college there. And it was a bunch of cracked people who were going to perform live comedy and then screen Michael Swaim and Abe Everson's movie, Kill Me Now. This was also, we also flew out Caitlin Large, who was in the movie. She's the lead in the movie. And there was a party one of the nights that we were in Beloit, Wisconsin, a strange town that none of us had been to before. And it had been years since Caitlin and I had seen each other, and we grew up together. So we were doing a lot of catching up, just sitting at this bar restaurant, talking at this loud party. And because we were in a strange town, you, Soren, obviously didn't know anyone. But there was music playing. You weren't going to interrupt Caitlin and I because you recognize that we're old friends catching up, and you didn't want to like be a strange presence there. So you just went on the dance floor with all these strangers and just danced. And it wasn't like a college party kind of thing. I know it's a college town, but this is just like a spontaneous dance party at a hotel bar, and you're dancing by yourself, just like smiling and having a good time. There's nothing ridiculous or sad about it. I remember thinking at the time, this must have been like 9 years ago, and I was thinking like, he's just so comfortable out there. What's it going to take for me to get that comfortable? And we've now learned what it's going to take: a year being alone by myself, and then finally being like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to take a Zoom dance class so I could be like Soren in the past and John Mulaney in that one late night interview I saw.
I think this is a great step forward for you.
Thanks, man. That's a lot of information that I was not prepared to unload.
Thanks to Feels for supporting our show. Feels has me feeling my best every day, and it can help you too. Become a member today by going to feels.com/QQ, and you'll get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. Thanks to Raycon for supporting Quick Question. Raycon earbuds start at about half the price of any other premium wireless earbuds on the market. Raycon's offering you 50% off your entire order, and here's what you got to do to get it. Go to buyraycon.com/QQ. It's like a leap. This is a dancing leap forward. Can other people see you in the class, or do you have your camera off?
I've turned my camera off except for the end. But some of my friends in real life were texting me because they knew that I was doing this. So I turned my camera, my phone camera, I filmed myself to send to them so I could I could show them my progress. And brother, I took three videos and I sent the best one, and it was the most humiliating thing I've ever done. there was nothing worse than going through these three videos after the fact and being like, ugh, this one.
Well, when you start something brand new, you suck at it no matter what. And that's never, no matter how many times you learn that lesson that it's okay to suck at something, it doesn't register. You're always like, well, I'm bad at it. I don't want people seeing this. When I learned to drive, I went up to up into the mountains alone. And I was like, I'll just do it here. This is where I will learn to park. This is where I'll learn to do it all, because no one's here.
Yeah. And I think you didn't learn to drive on the fanciest car in the world or you didn't learn to fly a jet first.
No.
I think I made a mistake. And you've seen me before, so you could see this coming. Even if you haven't seen me, you could tell by my voice that Afro-Brazilian dance is not...
That's not your...
That's not where you start. That is a hip-forward dance.
Yeah.
That's the instructor saying, it doesn't matter what happens with your knees or your arms. I'm like, well, fuck me then.
Yeah, it's very hip-centric. You're right.
Yeah. But let's get into our show because we have a guest and I'm very excited. So I want to waste no more time talking about dancing. This guest has been here before. If Cracked was like a kingdom with Jack O'Brien as its sultan, I as his whispering grand vizier, Soren, the boy prince who would be king, our next guest would be, without question, the executive editor, ladies and gentlemen, New York Times bestselling author, Jason Pargin.
I've been a little bit distracted because I'm Googling Afro-Brazilian dancing because what I'm picturing in my mind is extremely problematic for you to be doing. I'm sure it's not. Just because it's called that, I'm not accusing you of anything. It's just I wanted to get what I'm picturing out of my head because I'm sure that I'm the one who's ignorant here.
Yeah, it's crucial that you and all of our listeners know I didn't name it that. That is the name of the class that I signed up for, and if it's problematic, then perhaps I'll be canceled. The instructor, when I did turn on my camera, I was applauded for my bravery.
Is there a recital at the end of this that you guys all do and you have to, each one of you performs and everyone else watches?
No, not that I know of. God,
I need to orchestrate something like that.
Let's get into our show. Jason, do you have anything you want to say before we get into it? Or have we completely paralyzed you with adult Zoom dance classes?
I don't have any cool hobbies like that. This is what sucks about routinely being on a podcast with you or being on a podcast with Sean Baby, who always has some sort of a fight story he can tell. I don't have anything like that. I've been trapped in my house, and I guess in theory I could have used Zoom to meet people and do interesting things. I didn't.
Well, that's fine. I mean, you're doing a number of things because you're writing books all the time. Every minute that I've known you, you've been writing books, which I have like fully written one book, and I don't know that I will ever do it again because it's such a daunting and unbearable process. And you're into, what is this going to be, the fourth John Dies at the End book?
Yeah, the fourth John Dies at the End book, the sixth book total that I've written.
Jesus. Stephen King described writing a book as like being rowing a bathtub across an ocean, and it's just like in how lonely it is. And that, you're maybe the only person I can think of, Jason, who would be like, this is nice, I like it out here.
Okay. See, all right. I think we have brought this up on microphone before, because there was a time when my whole reason for working a day job was because I was afraid of what would happen to my mental health if I wrote books exclusively, because Stephen King's friend during that period was named Cocaine. that's how he got over his loneliness. The bathtub was cocaine and the proverbial ocean was also cocaine. So I knew that if I did not have the day-to-day, the conference calls, you know, the emails, like I would just have no reason to ever talk to people. So when I left, and I probably told this exact freaking anecdote the last time I was on here, but when I left Cracked, you know, a year ago, it was literally in March of 2020, I had this whole thing like, I'm going to spend this many hours writing on book. I'm going to spend this much, you know, like talking to people, doing stuff. I'm going to have a regular schedule. I'm not going to do that writer thing where you just drink yourself to death by the time you're 50. And the pandemic hit like that week. like I was watching the basketball game that announced that kicked off the pandemic for most of us. That was on like March 7th or something like that.
Yeah.
So it
yeah.
was like I left Cracked at the end of February, and then I was kind of on call for the next month in case something broke. But I was sitting down enjoying like one of my first nights off and watching a basketball game And then, like, doctors run onto the court and announce, everyone has to stay home for the next year. There's a pandemic. Also, Tom Hanks has it. We just found that out, too, for some reason. Everyone in this building is going to die. And it's like, what? They canceled the basketball game? And it's like 20 minutes later, it's like, no, we've canceled all basketball games going forward. We've shut down society tonight.
Yeah.
So I've not had a normal day. I have not had one single normal day in my life, I guess, because people constantly ask me, well, how's it going? How's it going just trying to be, you know, a writer full time, but that's like the only thing in your life. It's only work. It's not a team project. I have no idea. I hope it's not like this, because this has been awful.
It has been really terrible.
Yeah. I love that. You're just trying to relax with a single basketball game. And they're like, news is coming in hot. We don't know everything. Rudy Gobert just licked like 5 microphones. Everybody was sent home. Everybody in the world was sent home.
It happened stunningly fast. I mean, people have to remember this, right? Like, it happened within a few days because it was just so shocking. Those were the two things that kicked off the pandemic. And it's, as far as I know, that's like what made the Trump administration notice it was like, oh, Tom Hanks has it.
It's yeah.
So anyway, I have it very good. I'm not going to sit here and whine about my pandemic experience, because we could, any one of your listeners, we could invite them onto the show and they could probably tell a harder story than me. But on something where I was already afraid of like what a lonely, weird, insular life this would be. And then it's like, oh, also you can't leave the house.
Yeah. Well, the good news is that we will never invite listeners on this show.
Hey, everybody. Do you have stress? Do you have anxiety? Do you have chronic pain? Are you just a normal human walking around in this big bag of bones that we have to carry everywhere we go that just seems to depreciate and get worse and worse over time? Or do you have trouble sleeping? Well, you're not alone. Many of us do. I mean, I've got all those things. That's why I use Feels. Feels is a premium CBD delivered directly to your doorstep. Feels naturally helps you reduce stress, anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness. You just place a few drops of it under your tongue and you will feel the difference within minutes. The thing to remember about CBD though is that you have to find the right dose. So you may have to leave a little bit of room for experimentation over the course of a week or so. You may need to take more or take less to get the effects that you're looking for and to help the problem that you're specifically having. If you're new to CBD, don't feel bad. Don't feel stressed at all. There are a lot of people that are willing to help you. There's a CBD hotline and text message support to help guide you on your personal experience. I prefer to think of it as an adventure. Feels works naturally to help you feel better. There's no high, hangover, or addictions. And Feels can have you feeling your best every day. Join the Feels community to get Feels delivered to your door every month. You'll save money on every order, and you can pause or cancel anytime. Feels has us feeling our best every single day, and it can help you too. Become a member today by going to feels.com/QQ and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's feals.com/QQ to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. feals.com/QQ.
So I want to jump right into our episode. Quick question for both of you. I would like to know a simple piece of technology that you wish or you thought would be further along right now. And I would like to give it some context that I'm not talking about like a world-changing thing, like free or clean water for everybody or something to do with clean energy for the planet or anything like that. Something ideally every day. For mine, it's gonna start out sounding like I'm a gross, lazy, nasty boy, but I hate brushing my teeth, and I think it should be better by now. I don't hate the after effects of brushing my teeth. It's not a thing that I dread. I don't think I'm not a child where I feel like I'm pulling one over on anyone if I go to bed without brushing my teeth. If I go to bed without brushing my teeth, then something went wrong, and I'm unhappy about that. I understand the importance of brushing my teeth. I do it every time you're supposed to do it. I'm so frustrated that we did stick with bristles on it, and that was a great invention, and I'm stoked that we did that. And then we did electric, and that's a a huge leap forward for everybody. And now we've done the electric that will even time it out for you. They give you pulses every 30 seconds to know that it's time to switch to a different quadrant of your mouth, because there are four quadrants, and 2 minutes is the dentist recommended amount of time. We got all this shit down and we've stopped innovating. You still have to do my least favorite part, which is that I have to hold a toothbrush with my hand the whole time. And it drives me nuts. And I have to stand over a sink. I can't go anywhere because I don't want to drip the goo out in my home or on my clothes. So I'm standing in front of the sink. And it's one of the only tasks that I have that is part of my day that I can't multitask with. I can't. Maybe some people can text. I can't text and brush my teeth at the same time. I can't clip my nails. I can't shave while I'm brushing my teeth. I can't send an email or fold my clothes. I would love to fold my clothes and brush my teeth at the same time. And I feel like we've had a bunch of examples throughout pop culture from like TV and movies where there was some crackpot scientist who invented like a helmet that brushes your teeth, a hands-free situation. Like I've seen it in I want to say Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, and certainly Futurama, and I think Lego Movie. So some kind of like you're on a conveyor belt and your teeth get brushed for you. And these are held up as examples that prove the scientist is like kooky and a bad inventor. We laugh at them for doing this. And I'm not saying that I think a helmet that is like half loaded with toothpaste and the other half is like an erector set arm that brushes your teeth so your hands are free. I'm not saying that that would be like affordable or practical or chic if everyone in the world had that. But I also think like, let's fucking start there and then innovate from there, because no one is even trying to do a hands-free toothbrushing solution and it drives me absolutely bananas.
So your issue...
I can already tell that you're not as mad about this as I am.
Your issue with brushing your teeth is not... Like, the solution is not that there's slop coming out of your mouth constantly. You need a bib that you could have a bib for. Or that you've got a giant stick that has to go in your mouth.
No.
None of that is... none of that, and the fact that after you do it, anything that's citrus-based tastes like shit. Like, none of that none bothers of that. You. No. It's that you have to... manually hold the toothbrush.
That's correct.
Okay.
And that I can't do anything else. Like if I know what I'm going to describe is not going to look sexy, but this is where I'm at right now. If you could put a fishbowl on my head or one of those like old timey scuba things where it's just this giant sphere on my head and you had told me that like it's going to power wash my whole face and I just open my mouth and it'll do the work that brushing my teeth is supposed to do. If I just walk around with this orb on my head and my mouth open, if you told me I could do that and fold my clothes at the same time, I would do it. And I would love it.
Well, you happen to be in luck, Dan, because you're talking to somebody who, as I mentioned on a previous podcast, invented the electric toothbrush.
That's right.
And then the idea was stolen from me when I was, I think, 8.
Mm-hmm.
And I have other ideas. Like maybe that's the problem, is that there was one person who had like caught lightning in a bottle and then the idea was just grifted and now I felt so defeated that I haven't evolved. But I have another idea if you want it.
Is it going to solve my problem?
Yeah.
Because I want that. Because I feel like, let me just, give me one more second because I still feel like you're not completely on board yet. They invented a metal flexible neck brace so Billy Joel can play the harmonica and piano at the same time, and I feel like more people would get use out of my thing than his thing. He's the only one on the planet who was like, you know, it'd be great if I could play harmonica and piano simultaneously, and they were like, all right, fine, we'll put two of our scientists on that and then you'll buy all these harmonica holders. Whereas my thing is at least me and Billy Joel, at least the two of us would enjoy this thing, so that way he can brush his teeth and play piano at the same time, and I could fold my laundry. All right, now what's your invention?
Oh, fuck me. I'm looking it up right now, and somebody's already taken it. Somebody's already stolen it.
What is it?
I was going to suggest like a mouth guard that has like basically a car wash apparatus within it. Like it brushes on the inside of the mouth guard, So you just put the whole mouth guard in. It's custom to your mouth, and it does like a cycling bristle thing inside your mouth. So it's on both the outside and the inside of your teeth, and it's just sort of like massaging your gums. And now I'm looking at it, and there are like six different brands that are doing this thing. Mouthpiece toothbrushes.
I mean, surely this is... here are my two main questions. Are there... Does it seem dentist recommended? Or is it one of those things where dentists are like, look, if chewing your gum was a substitute for brushing your teeth, then dentists would give you gum instead of toothbrushes. Like, do dentists hate this?
There's some for kids, too. Yeah, there's so many of them that I have to assume that this works.
Okay, and now
that
how much...
is not good solid logic, Soren. In this world.
The Sonic Brush Pro is what I'm looking at. Oh, but it does have, it's very funny looking. It has basically like a big vape pod coming off the front of it because it needs a battery that sticks out of your mouth. But yeah, it is just a mouth guard with car wash bristles on the inside.
Oh, man.
It just shakes.
Man, there are, if you just Google image search Sonic Brush Pro, there are pictures of people using it, and it's, you wouldn't think that something could be described as less sexy than brushing your teeth, but they're doing it.
Just like a big pacifier.
It's a giant pacifier.
I can't believe my idea got stolen again.
I'm sorry,
this is why I got out of the toothbrush game.
So now I feel bad because when Daniel imagines like advanced technology, he's imagining like some gadget from a 1980s Rick Moranis movie, like a Rube Goldberg thing that some wacky mad scientist put together. Where I was thinking like, oh, so you want like a mouthwash you can swish around for 10 seconds and it just dissolves plaque off your teeth. Or even better, like once a year you go to your dentist and he puts like a wax or something on your teeth that just makes stuff bounce off of them. And it's just, you forget about it.
Man.
But no, you're imagining a helmet. You keep using the word helmet over and over again.
Yeah, I specifically like an old-timey scuba helmet. Like, even though that technology has gotten better and involves, like, a more modern-looking, chic mouth guard, I wasn't even going there. I was going further back because that's how bad I want this.
It was a whole aquatic suit that slowly filled with fluoride all the way up to just your mouth level drained again.
The only other idea I had, and also I am not shooting for the moon on this idea, was, like, what if there was a pill that you put in your mouth and it exploded violently but did the work of a toothbrush. In my head, this invention is still something you do 3 times a day and it still lasts for 2 minutes each time. I hadn't even conceived of like the possibility that someone would invent a once a year thing. I was like, no, I'll put this tiny toothbrush grenade in my mouth every morning and like sit with it exploding in my mouth. And then meanwhile, look at me. Turning pages with both hands free, or typing on my computer, or flipping a flapjack.
Turning pages.
Yeah. Haven't you ever wanted to like read Men's Health while there's a Pop Rocks explosion in your mouth?
Yeah, but not on a device in 2077 when this is all happening. You still have the paper magazine that you stole from the actual dentist's office when you went once a year.
Yeah, I'm still trying to get to the end of the maze in Highlights. Do either of you have simple technology you wish was further along by now?
I have 7 of them. We do not have to. We can just pick one. But I'm getting to the age where all technology, I feel like, is just burdening me. And all things that they claim are improvements are just make things worse. Like in cars, when they get rid of buttons and they give you a screen instead that's much worse than buttons. Mm-hmm. So, like, for example, the first one that pops into my brain is printers. I have never had a printer for my computer at home, in the office, anywhere that has ever worked close to the way it's supposed to. Whether it loses its connection, whether it just refuses to print, whether the ink cartridges or whatever dry up in between uses, because most people do not print something every day. They need it every once in a while. But that is a technology that I swear to God is not any better than it was 20 years ago.
That's so true, and it's bizarre that we've all collectively decided it can't be any better. Like, I don't own a printer, but there's one in my building, in like the office center of my apartment building, and the few times where I've needed a printer, I would go near it with my computer, and like you still have to go on your computer and try to find a printer in the network and then connect to that, and it doesn't work. And then I go to the people who work there and I'm like, yeah, I tried to connect my computer to the printer because I need to print out a boarding pass, and they're like, oh yeah, we can't, you can't do that. We all like, and you're not allowed to be mad at us either. We all agree printers are not supposed to work. So this is just one of those things. Maybe, I don't know. See if your friend has a printer.
It has. It's true. I mean, I've always struggled to, first of all, connect, but then also just like the printer has always, there's some sort of error on the printer, no matter what. And it's an error that just has a number associated, but you're not privy to the information of what that number means. And so you're just like, you're shit out of luck anytime your printer's not working. You're like, well, maybe it's a paper thing. No, it's not that. Maybe it's an ink toner thing. It turns out it's not that. Well, what do you think 202 might be?
Yeah.
It's print head alignment. It's not it's not the ink cartridge. It's the print head. It's like, well, isn't that part of the ink cartridge? No, it turns out it's not. Well, how does it get out of alignment? That's a good question. You need a new printer. But no, the one this last time, because I had the ink machine, I got so frustrated by the fact that it doesn't detect when it's out of ink. It just, when it's like halfway out, the software makes it stop printing to force you to buy, because that's how they make their monies on the ink cartridges.
Right.
So somebody's like, well, you do, if you're willing to spend a premium, you get a laser printer. Got the expensive cartridges, last forever. It's the toner cartridges. It has not worked. I have a whopping 2 computers in this house, so it's got to be networked over Wi-Fi. It will show up on my computer on my list of stuff. I will send a print job to it. It will say printing. It'll bring up the little box, and then nothing will happen. Nothing. I can reboot the computer. I can reboot the printer. One time it printed, I think, 6 days later. And it when you look up, it's an HP. I'm happy to say the name of the company. Because if you look up, they have a piece of software that lives on your computer and like your taskbar. It's called like Print Doctor, that you run to try to diagnose why your printer didn't print this time, which I have to run every time I want to print a document. Because again, I'm not running an office in 1996. I only have print things like 3 times a year. When a company gives you a PDF and you click on it, it's like, oh, it doesn't seem to be letting me fill out the PDF in my browser. They want me to freaking print it out and fill it out with an ink pen and then scan it back into my computer. So it's when that comes up that you have to own a printer, or else you have to go begging your neighbors like Daniel's going to have to.
Okay, it feels like should be in a renaissance of printing right now, because everybody has to be at home, and this is happening to every single person where they're getting mailed shit. I mean, they're getting emailed stuff that they have to sign and then send back.
A shocking amount of stuff is still done on paper, which is a separate thing we could talk about, because that should not still be a thing. But like with my taxes, half of my tax forms, the W-9 stuff, that freaking stuff came through the U.S. Postal Service in an envelope where it could have gotten wet or gotten lost or whatever. But anyway, the troubleshooting steps are all about like the server, connecting to the server and the hub. And it's like, I have 2 computers. I have 2. There's no hub. There's no matrix here that I'm having to connect to. It's just this computer, that computer, the printer. It should not be. It's like, no, your document has gotten lost somewhere in the vast web of this system. And it's been like that since the day it came out of the box. If you Google the problem, you will find many, many, many other customers having the same problem, and you just live with it, because it doesn't matter what you spend, it turns out. It doesn't matter what brand you go with. Which of the 2 printer brands you go with, there's about a 40% chance it will print, and a 60% chance it will not only give you an error message, it just won't give you an error message. It will just sit there. For all I know, one of my neighbors who also has a Wi-Fi HP printer, like they've just had like copies of my books printing out once a year. Like, oh, there's like a 400 page manuscript here that somebody sent me.
It's very funny that like it's a product unlike anything else I can think of off the top of my head, because my apartment building also has like a digital marketplace where anyone who lives there goes, and you can either say like, hey, does anyone have pizza recommendations, or does anyone know any good dog walkers? Someone recently posted, I'm in the market for a printer. Does anyone have a printer that they recommend? No. Not a single person has any kind of brand loyalty or any good experiences with a printer anywhere. And I feel like if I had gone into that digital marketplace and was like, hey, I'm thinking of getting into wooden hangers. Does anyone have any suggestions? I would get people who are like, yeah, don't go to this one. These are the ones that you're supposed to get. These ones are like strong opinions about wooden hangers that they stand by and will like go to bat for. But when it comes to printers, no one in Manhattan has ever had a good experience.
They also somehow bring down the quality of any other thing that they try to do as well. Like scanners work, but if you have add a scanner to a printer, there's a good chance it won't work anymore. Like a scanner on my phone, it never failed. I can always take pictures. It immediately turns into a PDF and I can send it immediately. But I remember trying to scan on a printer that I had where it had like a little top that opened up and you could do photocopies. And I would scan and it would send it to my computer maybe like, yeah, 40% of the time. And the rest of the time, it just... The document would just disappear into the ether. I wouldn't have it. Okay, I don't know about you, but I always feel like I'm looking at a screen. It's just part of my life that takes up, I would say, a very unhealthy portion of my day. When I get those little notifications at the end of the week where it's like, here's what your screen time was this week on your phone. It's never a good number. And I know that that's about 50% of the amount of screens that I'm looking at, because there's my computer screen, my television screen. I look at a lot of screens is the point. And I want to take a break from that every once in a while. And I get to do that with my Raycon earbuds. I use those to listen to podcasts, still get a lot of the content that I want, but I feel a little bit better about it because I'm not looking at a screen. I can listen to podcasts. I can check in with Terry Gross, see what's happening in the world. Shout out to Terry Gross. And I just feel like I can keep up, but I don't have to be staring at a screen any longer. And that just feels better. That's why we've teamed up with Raycon and recommend their wireless earbuds. You'll get 15% off your entire Raycon order at buyraycon.com/QQ. Look, we all know the problems with regular earbuds, right? You've got the wires that hang out that get caught on things, your zipper and your jacket. There's the stems that look silly hanging out of your ears. The sweat makes them fall out of your ears when you're running or you're working out and trying to do it. You want something that's discreet and something that will stay put. That's why I use Raycon. Raycon are built to perform anywhere, anytime, with water and sweat-resistant construction and Bluetooth that pairs quickly and seamlessly. And with enough battery life for 6 hours of playtime, you can unplug for a while. I don't know how long your workouts are. I don't need 6 hours, but 6 hours is nice to know that it's there, right? The best part, Raycon makes great sound accessible to everyone with wireless earbuds starting at half of the price of other premium audio brands. Raycon's offering 15% off all their products for my listeners. And here's what you do, specifically my listeners. Dan, go pound sand, buddy, because this is for the connoisseurs out there. Go to buyraycon.com/QQ. That's it. You'll get 15% off your entire Raycon order, so feel free to grab a pair and a spare. That's 15% off at buyraycon.com/QQ. buyraycon.com/QQ.
Soren, do you have a piece of technology for us, buddy?
Leaf blowers!
All right!
Fucking leaf blowing. How is that not evolved at this point? When you think about the how rudimentary that technology is, it really will piss you off because we have the technology to do like some sort of outdoor vacuum, which gets rid of everything all at once and you could just suck it all up into something and deposit it. But instead we decided like, let's just blow it all up into the atmosphere. Let's blow it into every other yard we can think of. And it just will stop existing once it's outside of our yard. I have a neighbor who has a dog. The dog shits in his yard and then the lawn people come, and what they do at the end after they're done mowing and everything is they just blow everything off into the corners. So there's always just piles of dog shit at the far reaches of his yard because they blow the dog shit too. And if you watch them out in the street, like people will just take leaf blowers and blow it right out into the street, and it's like, and it no longer is my problem. It lives out there now. They're also so loud, like blocks away you can tell when somebody is using a leaf blower because we decided gas is the best way to do it.
This is an important lesson in perspective because we never had a leaf blower growing up. We raked our leaves all the time. And so I feel like as soon as I saw someone with a leaf blower down the street, that's both like the peak of innovation and the peak of wealth. Like that's the fucking ticket. If I saw a leaf blower, I would run to whatever lab they invented the leaf blower and be like, guys, stop, you cracked it. You're not gonna top this, it's perfect. The rake sucks. This is the future.
The rake does suck. I will agree with you there. But I feel like, so snow blowing I get. Snow blowing you do have to, it is about moving all of the snow from one area to another area. But then it feels like we just tried to translate that to the leaf blower and it doesn't work the same way. It's a, snow is fine to move from one area to another, but when it's dust and debris that's just like wafting up into clouds around everybody who's walking by, it's like, it becomes a real nightmare.
See, Soren, one of my things on my list of many things that I had for the subject, just general lawn care was one of them. Because the same thing with grass. Like where I live, I'm in a neighborhood where people, for whatever reason, they maintain their lawns. It's a cultural thing or whatever. And if I like let mine go, just let it become a lot full of weeds, I think the police would come. Like there's probably an ordinance against it. That to me is crazy. It's crazy that the way you solve that, you either have to get out there with a machine and cut it yourself through the summer, it's at least once a week, or you have to pay a shocking amount of money to have somebody else do it and either haul away the clippings or blow away the clippings or do something. All of that, the only reason that's further down my list is because I guess I just assume that's like a status thing, like it's hard on purpose because it's to demonstrate that you can afford to do this. Where it's like a wealth thing. Whereas if they invent grass that like grows 3 inches tall and then just stops, and it's like absolute turf only is grass, because surely in this era of modern miracles, somebody could make such a plant that doesn't have to be watered. Again, I'm in the South. Everybody's got lawn irrigation, which is the most wasteful freaking thing I can possibly imagine, where you're just pouring out perfectly good potable water to keep your lawn green.
Yeah.
But I keep thinking, well, it's people like proving that they can do it because it's cost and time and effort intensive. So it's like, see, I'm the king of this little patch of land. Look how nice it is.
There's a knowledge to it as well. Like they like the wisdom of it, of, you know, that yes. You have to aerate every once a year. You have to fertilize, like you have to reseed, like to get it all the same color and uniform. There's like a pride to it. I know exactly what you're talking about. That's LA, like in a nutshell.
That's America. Yeah. And having a giant machine that just blows your problems into somebody else's lawn, that's the most American thing I can imagine. Or blowing it into the street, blowing it into the commons, into the public areas, just blowing it off your private property and blowing your trash into the public street. That is America right there. That should be our flag.
It entails wearing like basically a giant proton pack to get it done. You have to wear an engine on your back to do this job. At the very least, it feels like we could consolidate all that just into the leaf blower itself.
I'm now way in my head about this because I'm trying to figure out when I was brainwashed, because when I go to visit one of my brothers, sometimes the first thing out of my mouth when I get to their house is the lawn looks great. It's a thing that I notice and like I can see that it's good, it's well maintained. And I don't remember when I decided I give a shit about that. I feel like it was born in me, but no, I think I must have been conditioned to think that I'm supposed to care about that, or I'm supposed to want that, or that's the American dream.
Yeah, I wonder if there's something to it, like instead of your subconscious, you have harnessed nature in some capacity. You've carved out this little section, and you're like, I've domesticated this portion. It does exactly what I want it to do.
Huh.
This piece of the wilderness. I don't know. But leaf blowers really piss me off. And also, it's just like this weird thing that we've decided it's fine to do it anytime you want. You can do it. If you hear a leaf blower at 8 a.m. or 7 a.m., you're going to be like, oh, that sucks. But it's not like an offense where you can hate that person forever. Yeah.
You get to a rich enough neighborhood, you'll find they've got ordinances against it. It's if you get to a fancy enough neighborhood, I guarantee you will not see them running leaf blowers at 7 a.m. But it's I certainly do. But it's, I think if you've got enough influence with your city council or whatever, you can keep that out of where you live.
I wasn't. I don't know that I've lived in a neighborhood fancy enough to have things like ordinances, I also wasn't aware, Soren, that they're still mostly gas-powered?
Yeah. Huh.
There's some battery-powered ones are not nearly as strong. They don't blow nearly as hard. They exist, but they're not. You can't, like, the one he's describing, the backpack one, the one that will literally deafen you if you don't wear earplugs while operating it, that thing will blow a goddamn car over.
Yeah. You're creating your own meteorological event with that.
Yeah, you're harnessing, yeah, the elements. Now, I get the feeling of using, you know, a leaf blower. If there was like a little switch you could flip that would make it shoot the flames out of it, like vaporize some of the gasoline, turn to flamethrower, that'd be even better. Again, probably against the law, but.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, and the idea that we wouldn't, I just sort of glossed over it before, but the idea that we wouldn't create some sort of sucking mechanism is baffling to me. I mean, we didn't decide with vacuums like we were just going to blow it all out our front door.
Right.
Like we were like, no, let's take care of this stuff. Otherwise, it all just goes up into the air and then settles right back where it was.
Yeah, it seems like even an inventor who is past his prime and mostly out of ideas could just say, vacuum, but for outside.
Yeah.
We could do more inventions. Or, Soren, do you have any questions for our wonderful guest?
Yeah, Jason, I got a quick question for you. In all of your books... it seems like there's a really efficient evil within the stories or like some malicious force, but it's always a really stupid one. It's always kind of bro-y and kind of a doofus. Like the whatever that manifests as a person, it's always kind of a dickhead who's not that smart. And I'm very curious about why. I mean, in most horror and stuff, evil is so smart. The evil is intelligent. Like Paranormal Activity, it has to be so smart to be so scary. And you've chosen to go the exact opposite direction. I'm wondering what you think is so much more terrifying about dumb evil as opposed to like intelligent evil.
I wonder if people who aren't to me, like seeing this from outside, aren't going to say this is like a class thing. But for me, and I'll explain what I mean in a moment. Like for me, the idea of the devil is like a suave, smooth talker. Like Al Pacino in
Devil's Advocate,
The Scent of a Woman, where he played the devil. And it wasn't revealed until years later that he was the devil in that movie. It's really a lot of subtext, but
Hannibal Lecter, Lucifer, like they're all that.
Yeah, well, or even like the Dracula archetype of the vampire. It's always an aristocrat, right?
Yeah.
Like he's fancy and he's educated and a smooth talker, and it's the seductive, smooth talking evil. For me. When I wrote my first horror novel, or when John dies at the end, they meet like this Lovecraftian demigod, and he speaks with the voice of like a 13-year-old on Xbox Live. Like it's just homophobia and slurs, and because it's like he's not smart. He can't come up with like good insults. And it's terrifying because he's also incredibly powerful. And to me, there's nothing scarier than that. There's nothing scarier than a monster with no brain. Or there's like no head. There's nothing you can like negotiate with. It's just dumb, destructive evil. Because I feel like in the real world, people who believe in like conspiracies, they want the opposite. Like they want to believe that there's some all-knowing, like this evil cult that's secretly arranging all of the child abduction and child trafficking in the world, where the reality that it's just a bunch of people doing it for profit or whatever, boredom, is so much worse. Like they believe in conspiracy theories because they prefer to believe that there's some mastermind. So I keep that theme is probably in every book I write, this idea of like distributed evil, where it's kind of hard to find a mind at the center of it.
Yeah. I think, yeah. And I'm thinking just in terms of like the way people react to natural disasters and stuff when they're like, oh, well, this is God because we let gays marry each other. Like that kind of feeling of it's less terrible to believe that there's a malicious God than there is to think that there's a God that's not even watching, or that there is no God. Like there's nothing at the head of it. And we're all just suffering together.
But at least with a God, there's an element of like, well, you know, it's out of our control. This was God's will or whatever. But I feel like with conspiracies, they want someone to blame. They want someone to hate, because something like the most recent disaster when we recorded this of the many disasters that have happened. And the most recent one was the freezing in Texas, right? Where I don't know how many people wound up dying, but it was a lot. Where there was this cascading failure of, like, their power plants were not winterized. You know, it's a Republican state. There's certain, like, infrastructure is not in place to take care of people. There's a lot of things that in the aftermath you look back and the blame kind of spreads so many directions that it kind of doesn't exist, where it would be amazing if there was like one guy who was like, it was his fault for not properly preparing the state. It was his fault that they didn't have the ability to clear the streets or to keep the power plants running. It was his fault that they didn't have a grid that connected to the rest of the country to offload all of the things, all of these failures that went wrong. But the life usually denies you that. And so you're left with just all this suffering. And there's individual people you could probably find who are at fault, or some, you know, energy company CEO or whatever. But it's so much scarier to me when you don't have that. Because I think one reason people like horror where there is like one monster or whatever is because it's comforting.
Interesting. Yeah.
It's definitely, it's very effective horror when it's just a dumb, bro-y, powerful thing. Especially when you throw in like conspiracy theory nonsense. It's not hard to draw like modern parallels, certainly, when you see people armed and storming the Capitol and trying to like find and unseat the power. I'm sitting back cowering, being like, hey, no, large person with the gun, you are powerful right now. You like, I am very afraid of the thing that you are.
Right. Yeah. Something that's, there's this Twilight Zone episode where there's a little kid Twilight. How does that?
It's closer.
That?
Jason, did you know about this? That Soren in real life says Twilight the way that he just did. Yes.
As toilet. As a toilet zone. Fascinating.
Twilight. Yeah.
But yes, that episode. I'm familiar with that episode, and that's our listeners too young to have watched the Twilight Zone, but it's a classic. They did a Simpsons episode, a segment about it, where it's the little kid who has like godlike powers, but he still has the mentality of a little kid, right?
Yeah,
and so he throws tantrums and he has no rhyme or reason. Like, he'll do things just because he's bored, because, you know, a little kid. And it's the scariest Twilight Zone episode that they ever made.
It is really terrifying. It's like, and you watch this family that's just a slave to this child. It's very, very scary because you don't even know how to appease it. You don't, it's not even that you can't negotiate with it and try and tell it, no, no, my life is valuable, please spare it. It's that you need to make it happy and you don't, it's a moving target. You can't always make it happy because it keeps changing.
Yeah, there's a Stephen King, I mean, I'm sure there's 1,000 Stephen King stories like this, but Under the Dome by Stephen King, it's just this town in, it's got to be Maine because it's Stephen King, and suddenly there's a dome. There's a dome that covers the whole town, and for so long they don't know who put the dome there. And it's Stephen King, so we find out it's aliens. But there's a lot of speculating throughout the book, just like amongst the characters, and also you as a reader, you're trying to think, who put this dome here? And your brain naturally goes to like some force in the government, some smart person somewhere is doing some evil experiment, or it's aliens, some like smart alien who wants to study us, or some evil alien who wants to crush us. And I think we find out by the end of it that it's some like child aliens. Like, they have the power to do this, but it's the same as like if you or I were burning an ant with a magnifying glass, not really knowing what we're doing. Just like, you just know that if I put this thing here, look at the ant squirm. That's kind of interesting. That's kind of funny. It's really just like adolescent aliens who put this dome on this one town in Maine. And that's so much scarier than like a super smart thing that you think you can reason with, or a super evil thing where it's like, great, all I do now is try to fight it. And if I beat the evil thing, that's good news. And if I lose to the evil thing, well, I'm a good guy who went down fighting. But it's just a kid alien who doesn't know any better, and it's so much scarier. Spoilers, by the way.
Well, and it's just so weird to trace like that sequence of events back to the beginning, that it all starts with Homer bringing home that pig. And then, but it's, this is something, well, you'll see it. There's a part that's mentioned in the upcoming book where they, somebody gives a speech where they mention that, like, alien abductions and all the theories about the people have, where it's this very grandiose thing. It's like, oh, they're studying humans, or they're wanting to make a human alien hybrid, or they're, maybe they're preparing for invasion. And it's like, knowing what we know about people and humans and societies, it's far more likely that if aliens were abducting humans and studying them, it's due to some politician like trying to just distract the people, his people back home from some scandal, or it's just like they had money in the budget and that they have to spend it like this year or else they don't get that same amount of money next year. So they just picked up some humans and studied them just so that it will appear that they're doing something. Like, when you go outside of humans, you assume you're going to find like perfect rationality.
Right.
And like whatever the devil is doing, he's doing it for rational reasons. You know, he is, you know, he's jealous of God, or he's got a plan. He's trying to, the idea that there's no rational reason, that it's just somebody doing something for extremely dumb, like the idea that aliens would invade Earth because some alien general was like having an affair and the local media had caught wind of it on his planet. So to distract them from the scandal, he sent an invasion at Earth just to get that off the headlines. And because it's like, well, yeah, but if this has this kind of an impact on our lives, it has to have been done for some important reason. And it's like, no, you already know that's not true about the universe. That's what you want to be true.
Right.
Yeah. I feel like you just find a lot of comfort in horror when evil has a plan. Like, and it's executing that plan flawlessly. It just sort of feels like second nature to horror. And I do like, I love this new approach to
Jason,
it.
Jason, I feel like you just gave out three great movie ideas in that very eloquent answer to that question. And I just want everyone to know that everything said on this podcast is trademarked. Between the three of us, we've come up with three great movie ideas and one almost there toothbrush idea. We're really close. And
yeah, you're like 99% of the way to the toothbrush. Because once you start with a helmet, the rest can come together. It's just a matter of getting the parts on there.
Okay, well, I think we're about out of time here. I'm going to give you a chance to talk about things that you're working on and that you're excited about that you want to tell people in a second. I'm going to tell everyone where they can find all of us on Twitter. But God damn it. It's sitting as like a printed out copy on my scanner, and that's in another room.
Yeah.
I have to go get it. But so in the meantime, I want to give Jason a chance to talk about, we just were talking about John Dies at the End. I want to ask you, Jason, what was your least favorite part of the John Dies at the End movie?
The like 40 to 50% of the questions I get from fans is them trying to trick me into like trashing the movie, because I guess they figure that's the only interesting thing that I could say. It would be to like burn the bridges of everyone I work with. So no, I someday I will be elevated to a position where they can make a movie off something I wrote and I can just like Alan Moore, like just crap on it. Like Hollywood only ruins they ruin everything while I'm like literally sitting in a house bought with their money. I am not at that place yet. I cannot believe someone spent that kind of money to film something I wrote. I will be shocked by that until, but the only way that movie could have like put me in a position where I've been like publicly trashing it is if for some reason it turned out really racist or something. But I was sitting there at Sundance, like they brought me to the premiere at Sundance, and this whole time is like, I like right up until they started rolling it, I thought it was going to turn out it was a prank that they had just lured all of us into that theater to do like an Inglorious Bastards thing. Like they would just gun us all.
Oh
down.
Yes. That very funny prank like, at the end of Inglorious Bastards.
the prank they pulled on Hitler. So like, no, I thought it was a trick or something. Cause it's like the idea that they had actually filmed all this and it took years and they had actual actors in it who I've seen on TV. And I just sitting there watching the whole time, like, this is the greatest thing ever made. Because of course I liked it. It's like, this is all my idea. This is it. So no, but I will get that question probably forever. If you go out, look at like any Reddit AMA, it's like, well, what were you most disappointed about? Like, well, what would you change? What would you change about the movie? It's like, well, what do you mean? If in some magical world where I knew how to make movies, because I don't.
Well, so there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. When asked the question, what's his least favorite part of the movie? David Wong, Jason Pargin said, Paul Giamatti. You can follow Jason on Twitter at John Dies at the End. That's not with an end, D. It's just John Dies at the End, E-N at the end. You can follow...
Not enough characters on Twitter. It cuts you off there.
You can follow Dan at DOB_Inc. You can follow me, Soren, at Soren_LTD. You can email our show at QQ with Soren and Daniel@gmail.com. And you can follow, find, and hire our producer, sound engineer, editor, and general good guy, Gabe Harder, at GabeHarder.com. Jason, is this stuff you want to plug?
The last book is called Zoe Punches the Future in the Dick. Please support your local bookstores. The clerk will probably be amused if you go up and ask them for the name of the book, but you should be able to find it pretty much anywhere. I think as we speak, there's like a Amazon boycott going on, but that's fine. You can get it anywhere. The next book comes out next year.
If you want to follow some of his other novels as well, so you get caught up, you can read John Dies at the End and that whole series. There's the other series starts with a book called Futuristic Violence and Fancy Suits.
And they're all great. Our podcast record. Oh, shit. You know what I forgot to talk about? I guess it doesn't matter.
What?
This is a huge... This is an update for longtime listeners of the show. Soren got me into the show Taskmaster. We talked about a couple episodes ago. Soren, you know who else is now a fan of Taskmaster because of our show? Fucking Jason.
Who? Oh, good. Oh, that's so nice. Jason, yeah. I'm glad that you like that show.
Me and my wife listened to your show and then told me, like, okay, they recommended we have to watch Taskmaster. It's all on YouTube, everybody. It is wonderful. It's a BBC show that I'm sure if you listen to their episode, some people are only here for me, so they're actually unfamiliar with you two. But we've watched it through season 5 and there's never been a bad episode of it.
It's so charming.
It is a delight. There is nothing topical about it. There's nothing serious about it. There's nothing about the real world that will intrude on it. It is just people having fun in a very well done, very smart way.
Well, thanks for being on our show, Jason. Bye.